Hey everybody, welcome to another Baseball America Prospects podcast. I'm Kyle Glazer alongside JJ Cooper, back from winter break. Happy New Year, everybody. Before we get started, I want to remind you all that a prospect handbook has now been sent to the presses. You can order it online, baseballamerica.com store. See all the prospects we're going to be talking about on this podcast and many more.
900 plus scouting reports. We often get the question, so why buy it directly from Baseball America? And there are a couple reasons. One, we're going to give you a supplement that gives you an extra prospect per team.
Including an extra Giants prospect.
Including an extra Giants prospect. Two, you also get it much, much earlier. We will get our hands on the books and start shipping them out roughly weeks, close to a month. I wouldn't go a month, but weeks before if you order it from anyone else, Amazon, wherever. If you're waiting to see it show up in your bookstore, you're going to be waiting weeks later than you are to order it directly from baseballamerica.com.
So go ahead and give it a shout. Now we're going to dive into Giants prospects. JJ, this was obviously a team, 3 World Series in 5 years. They made the playoffs. It was only last year. Well, I should say last year, 2016.
But it is hard to remember that 2016.
Right. They made the playoffs. They won that one game playoff.
They lived up in some way to their even year pattern.
Definitely. This year, obviously, everything completely fell off.
Odd years are bad years for the Giants.
This was worse than normal. Now you look at this team, we've already seen they're not stripping it down, they're adding to it. The person who was number 4 on the Giants' top 10, Christian Arroyo, has since been traded to the Rays as part of the package for Evan Longoria. The Giants are going to go for it. I feel like that might be, I want to say, their only option, but it kind of is the best option for them. You still have Posey, you still have Crawford. Some of the pitchers have gotten older, but you still have Bumgarner. I do feel like you can see a scenario here where they keep adding, they have a little bit of a bounce back here, rather than stripping it all down. What is your perception of the Giants and their plan moving forward 2018, 2019, 2020?
I think what you said is kind of true, that I don't know what choice they have because this is an aging team. The core of this team, the things that are a little discouraging if you're a Giants fan right now is the core no longer can be described as here's your young core. Your core is predominantly guys who are going to be 30 or older in the 2018 season. Even Brandon Belt, if you're counting Brandon Belt as part of the core, Brandon Belt is no longer a young player on the rise. You are talking about players who, in many cases, have a sick. Joe Panik is your young position player. But this is a team that you are counting on bounce back years much more than you are guys who are going to be getting better because they're just growing into their peak. But the other part of it is this is a team that has a lot of money devoted to a lot of players. And many of these players are not exactly players. Your choices are, if you did a teardown, again, you could get a lot for Buster Posey if you wanted to trade Buster Posey. But most of these guys, if you did a teardown, are not going to net you massive amounts. Jeff Samardzija is not going to net you a massive deal right now. Johnny Cueto is much more valuable, hoping that you get Johnny Cueto in 2018 to be the Johnny Cueto we've seen many times in the past, than it is to trade him right now, coming off of a season that's not as good as Johnny Cueto at his best.
Plus, you'd be selling low on Brandon Crawford. You'd be selling low on Brandon Belt. So I do think that the Giants, it does make sense to me for them to go for it in 2018. We saw them make a really nice first-round pick this last year. They're going to have the number 2 overall pick. So I do feel like you can see a scenario where the Giants, some of these guys bounce back, they're better at the big league level, while they also improve their system a little bit this year. To me, this wasn't a case of, they're screwed, tear it all down, and start over.
But there are some things that they, as of yet, have not really fully been able to. Because
left field is still a hole.
Let's just look at this on the big league level. Okay, so they've added Evan Longoria, which you are hoping that you are still getting Evan Longoria, who still has a lot left to give.
He had a very, very good 2016. I think because the Rays were out of it, a lot of people were under the radar. That's where he hit his most home runs in any single season. Down in 2017, still not a horrendous year.
Right. A lot of money, though, tied in. You know, you still have a big contract left. But the other problem is, the problem that they face, and hey, they tried to be in on Giancarlo Stanton, which would have fixed a lot of problems. But this is a team, and Longoria helps a little bit, But it is a team in a ballpark that is hard to hit home runs in. But this is a team that is almost devoid of power in a game right now. Right. They need, for the Giants to be successful, unless they did a teardown, they need the game to go back to more of what it was when they were successful. The game has changed on them. And if you look, when we look at this Giants top 30, take Helio Ramos and Chris Shaw, who are 1 and 2 on this list, out of it. The rest of the Giants' hitting prospects, Aramis Garcia, I would say, fits in this a little bit. He has power too. But most of them would be described as well-rounded players.
Austin Slater, Ryan Howard, Jacob Gonzalez.
You know, well-rounded Steven players. Duggar. Steven Duggar, Brian Reynolds. They're well-rounded players, but what they would not describe them as is power is not usually their best tool or their second best tool. And the thing about it is this has been the Giants' approach. They have a big ballpark and all. If you look at the successful Giants teams, not that they have not hit home runs, but the core that they brought up, Brandon Crawford, Buster Posey, Joe Panik, when they had Matt Duffy, these are all guys who, when they were coming up...
First edition Pablo Sandoval had some power, but it was 35, 40.
Usually it's been hit above power.
Hit above power.
And so what's happened is that the game has become, you look at how many home runs they hit. I mean, there are stats, you'll see them if you get the prospect handbook. We also had them when we posted the Giants top 10. But this is a team that has no slugger, had no slugger in 2017. In a league where everyone hits home runs, they're now, so what they used to be is that they were, we're going to put together rallies because we're going to hit, you know, for average, we're not going to strike out a ton. And they also had a pitching staff that never gave up home runs. Now they give up home runs and they don't hit them. And the reality of it is that, as you said, Elliot Ramos is a great pick that they got. To get him where they got him, went out and destroyed the AZL.
Showed huge power.
And he is a guy that, when I say destroy the AZL, what is significant about that is that it doesn't obviously guarantee him success.
For a Puerto Rican kid.
But we are talking about, no one has ever questioned Ramos's tools. He can run. He has raw power. Ramos coming into the draft, the questions were, how well will he hit with a wood bat against more advanced competition? So far, you could not ask for better than going out and hitting 348 in the AZL with power, with speed, with not, and he struck out a good bit, but not an absurd amount of strikeouts. Everything about that year was everything you wanted to see. And that is a clear number one in the system.
Absolutely. And I want to clarify what I said about the Puerto Rican. A lot of times, because just the nature of Puerto Rico and the way their baseball is set up, it's very different than the U.S. system. A lot of times those kids are more raw. They take a little bit of an adjustment year. Just an example, Carlos Correa, right after he signed, that first year was not a great year. He needed an offseason to get out to
the first half
of
the year. The next year after that in Quad City, he just kept getting better and better.
And that's where, not saying Elliot Ramos is Carlos Correa, but you get the point. A lot of times the Puerto Rican kids, it takes longer. So for him to adjust as quickly as he did is hugely promising. We do get into the system a little bit. I think for me, when I look at the Giants, the biggest thing for me is you cannot have automatic outs in your lineup, particularly in the National League. And for the better part of the last year, the Giants have had virtually three automatic outs in their lineup. Whoever was playing left field, whoever was playing third base, Nunez did okay this year when he played.
And
their pitcher spot. Every time through their order, they had three automatic outs. You cannot have that. They've addressed with Longoria. I will say that's where Chris Shaw and that becomes interesting to me. Because to me, left field, look, you still have Gorkys Hernandez. You still have Gorkys Hernandez, Jarrett Parker, Williamson.
I will say you got to throw center field in that same equation because now, this is why you're talking about Steven Duggar because the reality is
Denard Span has been traded away.
And Denard Span was a problem for them because, the interesting issue you have, especially in a more power-oriented game, okay, Chris Shaw fits into this equation. It's like Kansas City in that these are expansive outfields. The Giants have generally viewed that what they need in the outfield They're corner guys. They're not center fielders.
They have to be able to cover ground.
But they're not far off. And so their approach has generally been that you end up having guys who are in corners who may give up a little bit of power, but what you get in return is you get that ranginess, and they've got a lot of ground to cover. Chris Shaw is not the rangy guy who's got a lot of ground to cover, but what Chris Shaw does do is that he very well, if Chris Shaw got 550 at-bats next year, he probably leads that team in home runs.
No question. And I think for me, so we talked about Elliot Ramos is the clear-cut number one in the system, no question about it. Very much a top 100 prospect caliber type. Mm-hmm. When you're putting this list together, Chris Shaw, in the past, just to give some context, I've generally been a higher-ish man on Chris Shaw. There have been other times, you know, you and I have had some discussions about him, and I feel like, generally speaking, I've been a tad higher than you at times.
Probably so, because I...
But overall, was he for you a clear number two in the system, or was there a discussion debate with you with, at the time, Christian Arroyo, Tyler Beattie?
2, 3, 4 are all a discussion. The thing about it is, though, is let's make clear. Number one, Elliot Ramos, like you said, clear top 100 guy. I don't see another top 100 guy in this because I look at this and I'm saying, Chris Shaw has power. He does. But he is going to give some of that back wherever you play him because he's probably actually a little bit better in the outfield than he is at first base. But he's not particularly good. He's below average whichever spot you put him.
So it was interesting. I went up to Richmond this year, mm-hmm. and just the coincidental timing of it, it was right when he started to move to left field. And one of the things that I thought was a positive. He had played right field, but it was in college. It was many years ago. He's in left field now. It was a situation where even talking to some of the pitchers, they said they could see the effort. This wasn't a guy who was just putting out there and pouting. They could see the effort. You started to see him, at least the games I saw him, he came in okay, and he moved side to side okay. It was going back was a problem, and it's going to take reps. I think as much as you know these guys are professional athletes, like anything else, the more you do it, the better you're going to get. You know, I look at him in left field compared to Rhys Hoskins in left field. Chris Shaw, it was better in left field than Rhys Hoskins in left field, but
the difference being, though, is Rhys Hoskins has always been a first baseman. Chris Shaw, for his career, if you add up Chris Shaw over the past 6 years, this is not where I know he played more this is not something where Chris Shaw is all of a sudden being exposed to the outfield. That is his position. First base is the one, and really, let's just again, I like Chris Shaw as a prospect, but let's be straightforward about it. One of the reasons he's moved back to the outfield is partly it's because they have Brandon Belt right now. That's but the other reason about it is that Chris Shaw at first base, which was something that they knew was going to be a project when they moved him there. But he's
there all 15, all 16.
But he's not been that great there.
Right.
And so part of the reason you move him back to the outfield is there is this general feeling that he is a little better in the outfield. You're hoping he's a 40 defender in left, which again, for most teams, if we're talking about that he's going to play in Fenway and he's playing with the Green Monster, you'd say,
can be tricky, but yes, yeah, I get
but
your general point.
The range is not. Compare that, though, with what he's doing, and you go, okay, because it's not just that you're going to play in San Francisco, because you're also going to play in Colorado a lot. You know, you have ballparks out there,
even San Diego. In Arizona. You know, Petco's a big gap.
Right. So the point being is that if you play in the NL West and you're a defensively limited outfielder, it comes back to cost you more than it would, say, again. Like, I mean, again, you don't want to go overboard on this, but compare that to a left fielder who's playing in the AL East and you're like, okay, well, Yankee Stadium, it's not that bad.
Toronto's straightforward, Tampa Bay.
Right.
They're all straightforward.
So you do have a little bit more emphasis. But no, when you say Tyler Beattie's 3 on this list, mm-hmm. and Tyler Beattie, I don't want to have prospect fatigue. I want to try to avoid that. And it's hard with him because when you see Tyler Beattie at his best, he looks like a mid-rotation starter. But there's been a lot of times in his career where when you see him at his best, he's throwing strikes with above-average stuff. There's been as many times in his career where either the stuff backs up to average or the control is below average, which means that he's not really staying ahead of hitters. there is some thought. You talk to scouts who think that he's a guy, he's an intelligent dude, but it almost like they would love to see him basically simplify a little bit and just master a couple of pitches instead of having a pretty varied repertoire. So that's what fits with him. And he's coming off of a year where, you know, he was hit around pretty well while not striking out a whole lot of guys.
83 strikeouts. Gave up over a hit an inning and over 100 innings. It was not, but you know, it's PCL, but you'd like to see at least a little more
missing bats. And it's PCL, but Sacramento is not, you are going to play.
They have to travel to Reno, but yes, you're not pitching half your games
this
in
is
Reno
not a guy who's
Salt
pitching
Lake.
At Vegas or Salt Lake or Reno where your home park and your road park. This is one where the home park is pretty fair, but admittedly you are facing some road parks that are pretty tough.
I do think for Beedy, you mentioned prospect fatigue. You know, I feel like he'll get his shot this year, see how he does, what his ultimate role is going to be. You know, do you feel like he will end up in a starting rotation? Do you think when all's said and done, he ends up a part of their bullpen?
I think he'll get shots in the rotation. But the thing about it is with the Giants, we're talking about that they're going to continue going for it. Like, you look at the Giants right now. Right now, when you say he's going to get a shot.
That's Bumgarner, Cueto, Samardzija. And by the way, Chris Stratton had Ty Black. Didn't do terrible for a rookie.
Right, and Chris Stratton.
Didn't
when
miss
we
many
talk
bats.
About, when we talk about prospect fatigue, this is what I'm talking about with Beedy. Chris Stratton was as erratic, if not more, and Chris Stratton's stuff for the majority of his minor league career was not the equal of Tyler Beedy's. But Chris Stratton steadily got better, and that season he had this year was better than he's been for the majority of his minor league career. So, but what I'm saying with that is that if those guys are all healthy, Tyler Beedy's not knocking on that door. He's headed back to AAA to start the season unless there are injuries. But so when you say that, I still kind of think a lot of those guys, like, I mean, if you said who's going to be in the rotation in 2020, I still think probably Beedy fits into that. But it is going to be a little harder. Like, again, it depends on health, you know, and the other part it does depend on is okay, the Giants are going for it again. Let's see how that works out. If it doesn't work out, if you are sitting there and it is July of 2018, and the Giants are 10 games under 500, which is truly, if you're a Giants fan or in the Giants front office, perish the thought, because that would
That's
be...
That's when you probably start
at saying that point, look. You do have to start saying, okay, everyone must go. Again, not maybe everyone, but most everyone must go. But let me... One example of that I do think is interesting, but the Giants ballpark and what it does. Brandon Belt had a season last year that I think you could describe as perfectly acceptable, but nothing exceptional about it. That's kind of what he is right now for them. And the funny thing about that is if you try to trade Brandon Belt because of that, and I know that teams are more intelligent now and all that, and you do look at how the ballpark affects him. But if you trade Brandon Belt, Brandon Belt's not going to probably net you a massive return. Okay, you get something, but... Again, right now, if you look at bat first, there are a lot of available bat first free agents out there who you could have just for the price of the contract. If they traded Brandon Belt though, and he was put into a ballpark that is more conducive for what he is,
if you put him in Yankee Stadium,
he could be a star.
Yeah,
because Brandon Belt is a terrible fit to me. For the ballpark that they have. Now, that's no fault of Belt or the Giants. Great job on their part. They drafted him in the fifth round and developed
him. A short right field, you know, Yankee Stadium, not that
right.
The Phillies have room.
You're talking about they have this massive right field. Yeah. And so that limits Brandon Belt's value for them. But at the same time, if they end up selling him off, at some point there could very well be the man, why did the Giants not get more for Brandon Belt? And it's like because the ballpark that he plays in limits what he can do.
There's no question. I want to circle back to Beedy real quick. You know, one thing that's interesting to me, and this was brought up to me with a scout, not talking about Beedy, but talked about a couple Giants guys, you know, someone who has the Giants system. You know, he brought up Kyle Crick as a guy that, hey, wild, wasn't sure what the heck was going on there. And came up last year, did a very nice job in the Giants bullpen. Still didn't throw a ton of strikes comparatively. You'd like to see the walk rate come down.
Right. He was on the right side of wild, not uh-oh, you could not pitch this guy.
Now, in fairness, Crick missed a lot more bats in the minor leagues than Tyler Beattie did. He also needed 3 different years at AA. So, I mean, I think that
and,
to me...
And his season, he came into 2017 coming off of about as bad a season. I mean...
To have a 5.04 ERA in Richmond.
No, but just not just Richmond, more than a hit an inning, just right, really right at a hit an inning, with 67 walks in 109 innings and 86 strikeouts.
Yeah.
There was very little... And the thing about it is that the year before that, when he had gone to the pen, he had not shown the ability. His stuff, you always hope, you put a guy in the pen that his stuff will tick up. When he went to the pen the year before... His walk rate
got worse.
And his strikeouts stuff did, went... And his stuff didn't get better.
Yeah.
Like, everything about him coming into 2017 was every trend was in the wrong direction. And you're right. They put him in the pen. They simplified what he was doing. And I still do think you have to be a little worried. He is not out of the woods yet where you say, oh, yeah, don't worry about this guy in any way, shape, or form. That said, the stuff is as good as anyone pitching out of their pen. And he is good enough stuff-wise. He doesn't have to be locating. He just has to be around the zone.
But I think where it gets interesting is if you could see something like that with a Beattie where, hey, it hasn't been perfect. Again, different pitchers, but mm-hmm. just that sense of, you know, top draft pick, top prospect type where it hasn't gone smoothly, but at least there's still a potential major league role there.
Oh, I think that there's a major league role for Tyler Beattie. I think that there's a major league role for Andrew Suarez, who is right. also a top 10 guy for them. You know, I think that these dudes – are, you know, they're guys.
Right.
So, you know, what they aren't, it's hard when we're talking about this and where the Giants are as a farm system. These aren't guys where you say, they don't have a guy in this system right now who you point to and say, he has all the attributes you're looking for in a front of the rotation starter.
Right.
Tyler Beattie is a guy at this point who, if everything lines up right, you hope he's a 3. Realistically, he's more of a 4 or 5 starter. Or, as you said, he ends up being a useful reliever. Andrew Suarez is a guy who...
Probably a 5 starter at right, best. Right. But useful, you know, lefty.
No, the guy, you know, Garrett Williams is the guy who, you know, he's number 7 on this list before the trade. He's number 6 now. Garrett Williams, lefty who has more middle-of-the-rotation stuff. That being said... You know, the control has gotten better. It still has work to do. He's further away. And this past year was a giant step forward for him as far as control and all that. So
yeah, so I want to dive into him a little bit. I mean, what
highest upside of these guys we're talking about.
He's, you know, San Jose, when it got up to San Jose this year, so Giants fans will probably start there again this year. You can drive mm-hmm. down, take a look at him. For those, you know, who haven't seen him, I mean, what were the reports you were getting on Williams? And you mentioned he's the highest upside. Why is that?
Well, fascinating what the Giants did 2 years ago in the draft is they went with I can't describe it as a risky draft because what they did is they took...
Everyone who threw hard and didn't care if it was over the plate, right?
Everyone who threw hard and didn't throw it over the plate. Like, if you threw hard and got it over the plate... You were already gone by the time they're drafting these guys, but we're talking about Crook, who they included in the Longoria deal. You're talking about Garrett Williams. You're talking about Stephen Woods, who they included in the Longoria deal. You're talking about Alex Bostic from Clemson, who I think had 15 innings. You could go to Reagan Bizarre, you know, who had thrown a lot the year before, had been hurt, but had been wild, but with big stuff. They went with. We're going to take guys who have a chance to be something. Like, because again, we're talking about Garrett Williams, a 7th-round pick. They took a 7th-round pick who has 3 pitches, and at his best, you could throw at least a 6, if not a 7, on his fastball, and at least a 6 coming out into the draft. At his best, you could say, okay, maybe it's a 6 breaking ball. You don't get lefties who are 90, who've been potential, talked about as potential first-round picks. You don't get those guys in the 7th round very often. Why do you get him in the 7th round? Because he barely pitched his junior year because he was so wild that Oklahoma State really did not feel comfortable using him. Okay, that's why he falls. They took that chance. And to their credit of their drafting and their player development, he's a guy who's been well served by pro ball. In pro ball, he could go out there, and if he pitched well, he's going to get the ball again in 5 days. If he pitched poorly, he was going to get the ball in 5 days. It's a little different than when you were in college, where if he pitched well, he was going to get the ball in 7 days, and if he pitched poorly, he wasn't, because he was playing on a team, an Omaha-caliber team. And the reality of it is even a midweek, they were like, no, we have guys who we are more comfortable are not going to tax our bullpen, because we're going to have to go out there and go get them right away. And that's the situation with him. He's taken that step forward. It actually, again, I would say it worked out for him, because Garrett Williams is in the top 10 for them. Bostic and Woods were both top 30 prospects for them. I mean, not Bostic. Crook and Woods were both top 30 prospects for them, who they now have already traded and gotten back Evan Longoria in the deal. So it really worked out pretty well for them. That, again, the last two drafts, I've liked some of the things they've done.
You know, when you get your prospect handbooks, you'll see our grades, and you'll notice, Elliot Ramos is the highest upside grade on this list. But and as well, you mentioned, Garrett Williams is the second highest. Now, there's other guys ranked ahead of him because of the risk factors involved.
They have less risk, but
this
he is
the guy who absolutely has it. You know, we've talked about the Giants and their left field hole, which has been an issue for years. You mentioned now they're probably going to have a center field hole. They have three outfielders that you put in the top 10, all different levels of the system, behind Chris Shaw. You have Brian Reynolds, Steven Duggar, Sander Fabian, all different, very different players, different levels.
But they all have, they're very different players, but at the same time, they are all guys who fit what we're talking about, which is that the normal Giants outfielder, the power is not the first thing you talk about. And I think that's true of all three of those guys.
No, absolutely. I mean, so when it comes down to, you're making your scout calls, how did you suss them out? You had Reynolds fifth in the system, Duggar eighth, Fabian ninth.
Well, the easy part of that is Fabian, guys like Fabian. Scouts who I talked to for the last couple of years have liked Fabian. At the same time, he had a sub-300. Now, Augusta's a tough place to hit, but he had a sub-300 OBP in low A, further away. But slotting him at the back of this, there's a lot of projection still involved because, yes, he's a really good right fielder defensively, but a right fielder has to mash. And you are projecting, he's shown some power, and he had better second half. He's shown some power already, but you're going to have to also hit some
there's
to go with
of,
it.
There's a little bit of boomer bust with him. He's got to...
Right. He walked 10 times in 122 games. That's going to have to improve.
Yes.
That guys don't do that long term and have big league success generally.
So we know
so
he's
that's why
back.
He's the back. Duggar and Reynolds is tougher. It really is, because really, I think Reynolds has just a touch higher upside, because Brian Reynolds is a guy who still, when you talk to scouts, it often comes down to they still have this hope of what he could be. And maybe it's unfair to him. Maybe they keep hoping for him to be something that he's never going to be. But they keep saying, man, you could see him being, he has strength in the swing. He has the ability where there could be some significant power to go with a guy who can run some, who, yeah, he strikes out. But the funny thing about this is he's always hit for pretty good average too. And maybe that's unfair to him, because maybe it is. It's like they keep ascribing power to him that may never appear.
But I will say, one of the things to consider is this is still a guy. It's not like he's gone out in his, first couple years and he's slugged, 400. He's got a 469 slug. There's a lot of doubles there. You start to see some power. 26 doubles, 9 triples, 10 home runs. And here's the kicker, too, and this is where I actually think people are a little light on him personally, having seen him. San Jose, people say, Cali, hitters league. Not in San Jose. Not at all in San Jose. And here's what Brian Reynolds did away from San Jose last year. 348, 403, 518. Mm-hmm. In San Jose, 272, 322, 406. San Jose, Modesto, it's very tough to hit home runs there. Mm-hmm. And he didn't. But you still saw a 518 slug away from San Jose. Now, some of that, going down to Lancaster inflates that. But he's in the north. They don't play there that often.
Right,
Visalia's a little bit of a hitter's park. But for the most
part, High Desert's no longer in the league.
Bakersfield was more of a hitter's park than anyone realized, too. So, to me, you see what he could do on the road. again, it's a different scenario because he's going to have to go play in another pitcher's park in Richmond. San Francisco as well as a pitcher's park as well. But to me, I think there's more power that is playable than he's given credit for. And he's a good hitter who does everything well enough. To, you know, talking to a lot of evaluators in the Cal League this year, it was, hey, this guy's going to be an everyday big leaguer. It's just a matter of to what degree.
But again, what it comes back to also is, and this is the difference between him and Duggar, is obviously Duggar's closer. You know, he played last year, basically the majority of the year at AA, reached AAA at the end of the year. But the other thing is Duggar's a better center fielder than him.
Correct.
And Reynolds fits with the Giants. He is that traditional corner outfielder that they've had. The guy who ends up playing right field because they view right field generally as almost another center field in some ways. But that's where I could see the argument, and I debated putting Duggar ahead of Reynolds because he is a little closer. And again, you know, he is a center fielder. He's not going to be that. There was talks that they were looking at Billy Hamilton. He's not a Billy Hamilton. He's not anything like that. But he can play center. Again, with him, there has always been this thought of, could he hit for more power? And you got to say right now, probably now, again, we are in a crazy world where power all of a sudden appears, you know, hey, launch angle this and the ball's going to fly in big leagues and all that. Boom, here's 15 homers. But 17 homers in 232 games. And as you said, now Richmond's a tough place to hit home runs, admittedly. But, you know, at the same time, and he's had some injury issues, but he's had time in Richmond. He's had two parts of two seasons in San Jose. You are talking about a guy who has not played in just brutal parks year after year. Like, I mean, there are the road in, you know, in the Cal League should still give you enough to hit more right. than he's struggling to get to double digits.
Right.
And so that is the limiting factor with him, where you say, okay, again, it's the Giants list overall, this is not a great farm system. And so when we talk about prospects, we're talking about prospects who have significant strengths and significant warts, weaknesses as well. And it's a balance of those almost time and time again.
I will say I had a couple scouts in the Arizona Fall League tell me they thought of Duggar as kind of the pop-up guy for them. A lot of guys who didn't have, you know, Richmond or Sacramento coverage or just didn't have Giants coverage in general and felt like he was a guy that opened their eyes for the reason you stated. You know, a lot of second division center fielder types, hey, you know, can do some things for you out there in center field, puts the bat on the ball enough where you can say, yeah, this will work, you know, not again in any kind of standout capacity, mm-hmm. but, you know, be a fine player. You know, we're going to wrap up here. We've gone through most of the top 10. We talked a lot about, you know, is this the worst farm system in baseball? The answer is no, it's not. Now, you know, Christian.
We haven't talked about the worst farm system in baseball.
That's still coming
down the road.
But where is this 20? You'll see our organization talent
right.
rankings. In the
handbook, what I'll say is this is
27th, 24th, 20th. How do you
no,
kind
no,
of see
it's
it?
Worse than this is one of the weaker farm systems in the game because right now, when you look at where they are right now. And again, you know, what you have at the top is more important. Depth is nice, but what you have at the top is more important than that. And in this system, right now, you've got Elliot Ramos, who is a top 100 caliber prospect. And we're saying top 100 because the fact that a guy who went, you know, I think it was 17th in the draft last year is going to make the top 100 in his debut season is significant. There's not going to be 17 draftees from this draft correct. Who jump right in the top 100. So that's a great pick for them. But that's probably the lone top 100 guy they have.
I'll give you guys a spoiler. I do consider Shaw as like, you know, number 95.
Right.
95.
He could crack the very back of the list. I'd say it's unlikely, and then you're done. Like,
and there's not an argument. As much you can say, I like this about Tyler Beattie, I like this for Brian Reynolds. There's not an argument for them in that caliber.
No. And so what happens is okay, so you're talking about that. Now, that puts them better. There are some systems who are going to get shut out. They're not going to get shut out. But, again, when you talk about the difference between, there are a whole lot of systems where number 4, number 5, number 6 on their top 10 will be cracking the top 100. So that right
or
there.
Or at least in strong consideration.
Right. And so, I mean, we'll have at least 5 organizations that have 5-plus guys on the top 100. I feel that's pretty comfortable saying that. So what I'm saying is yes, this is a system. Now, again, let's say that they are in it this year. And they, you know, again, they've got the thing I would say is we're recording this. This is how slow the free agent market's moved. We're recording this. Now we're in the second week of January. And if you describe the Giants offseason, I would describe it very much as we still don't know what they're doing. We don't know what direction they're going in. Because now, again, it would involve a lot of big checks. But if they went out there and added a Lorenzo Cain, or they went out there and added a J.D. Martinez. I don't think they're going to do that. But you know, all of a sudden, there's a lot of
the dynamic changes.
The dynamic, if they go out there in the free agent market and they add a significant free agent, that changes the dynamic. Because right now, as it stands, it's very hard for me to believe, as you talked about their outfit, it's very hard for me to believe that they're going to hold stand pat on where they are right now in the outfield. Because if they do...
If so they do, they're...
Steven Duggar is making the jump a long, long way, you know, to get to the big leagues, because he has some AA time under his belt, but that's about it.
Well, I mean, Shaw will be there first. He's been AAA.
I'm saying, but Duggar, they have to have a center fielder.
Right, after a center fielder. And that's
Chris Shaw can't do that.
That's correct.
And Chris Shaw, you could pencil him in the left. I do think, or you... But maybe the jury's not out on Mack Williamson and Jarrett Parker, but the jury's probably a little bit out on Mack Williamson and Jarrett. But you're talking about those guys being in the mix. What I'm saying is I don't see them going into the season saying that our plan is Chris Shaw with a fallback of Williamson or Parker.
Correct.
I think them going into the season saying at least we have someone who is going to start the season. And maybe Chris Shaw forces his way into that.
Or if we acquire him in by July, we're out of it, trade him and bring him up. We'll see. It should definitely be an interesting rest of the offseason for the Giants.
I was
going to
say, and the other thing I would say for this Giants list, though, you know, we talked about the top 10. There are a couple of interesting, to me, very interesting guys.
Quick hit, top two.
Oh, the two guys were fascinating that were not in the top 10. You know, Alexander Canario, who has yet to play in the States, and Gregory Santos, who they picked up in trade, those are the two who, if you told me a year from now that both of those guys are easily in their top 5, wouldn't stun me. Because those are, when you talk about the upside guys who are a long ways away, those are guys, they always have had arms in the system who can throw hard.
Maranta, Rodolfo Martinez is still around.
You know, they always have had that, and they still do. So there are some of those, but Canario is the guy who, if you told me that he is a year from now, if Ramos has a good year, he's number 2 on this list. Again, that's asking a lot. The guy's yet to play above the DSL, but he had a really good DSL. He's tooled up beyond belief. Again, really what it is more than anything is that there's a limit to how high you're going to go till you make it to the States and put up those numbers, because we're talking about the AZL next year.
Right. So we'll see what happens. Well, I think that'll about do it for this edition of our Prospects podcast. For JJ Cooper, I'm Kyle Glazer. Thanks for listening, Giants fans. Stay tuned. We'll have a lot more podcasts to come.